Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Texas Sunrise. Narrated by Terrence Aislefford and Eric Messner. With performances by Danny Gavigan, Thomas Keegan, Tim Pabone, Yasmin Toison, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Scott McCormick, James Konacek, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Drew Kopus, Alyssa Wilmoth, Christopher Graybill, Catherine Aislefford, Nick DePinto, David Harris, Bradley Smith, Richard Rowan, Patrick Bussink, Bobby Aislefford, Gary Tells, Tim Carlin, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, and Mort Shelby. Texas Sunrise. Part 1, Massacre at Goliad. In his later years, Joshua Buckaloo seldom spoke of Goliad and the terrible thing which happened there. Even in his old age, there were nights when the memory returned in a dream, and he would wake up suddenly with the cold sweat breaking, the horror as vivid as it had been in his youth. Yet there was fierce pride in the memory, too, for Joshua Buckaloo ever afterward considered himself one of the original Texans. So, as each of his sons came of age to understand, and later his grandsons, he would tell them the story, that they might share his pride in their heritage, and that they might realize and value the awful sacrifice other men had made for Texas. Always, he began the story long before Goliad. He began it where it had begun for him, one early spring day in Tennessee.
Entertainment was scarce in those parts. A good fistfight drew a crowd, and it was usually certain to stir the betting blood. But nobody was betting this time. They could tell that I was fixing to get my plow cleaned good and proper. Now, I could have whipped the Kiefer brothers without even breaking a sweat, provided I took them one at a time. But the two together were a mite of excess. They had me staggering in the dust of the crossroads where Gailey's Grocery dispensed everything from harness leather and red calico to raw corn spirits in a jug.
Oh, this ain't no ways a fair fight. I didn't go to fight both of you.
You got us anyhow.
I saw my brother Thomas edge through the crowd.
Thomas, come and help me.
Thomas was tall and strong, and he had a face that could be as grim as a hangman. He sat himself down in an open spot on the porch and eased the butt of his Kentucky long rifle to the ground. Both Kiefers were rushing me again. Their weight brought me down and crushed the breath from me.
Now, Josh, let's hear you holler quit.
They twisted my arms. The shame of defeat was as bad as the pain. I threshed and pitched.
Give up, Josh. You're making a fool of yourself. All right, boys, the fun's over. Let him up.
The Kiefers waited too long. Thomas grabbed a fistful of hair in each hand, then cracked their heads together.
I said it's over now.
The Kiefers let go and jumped back the way men will jump away from an angry bull that might come up fighting. I rose, eyes blazing, but my knees betrayed me. I knelt, unable to stay up.
Get your rifle and let's be moving. Pa wants to talk to us.
What for?
That Colonel What's-His-Name from Texas has been by the place again. Pa's got that glow in his eyes.
Thomas let me struggle to my feet without help. He stood back, making it plain that he disapproved of my foolishness. The crowd was scattering. I swung around to glare at the Kiefers, who leaned against the porch, still breathing hard. Snag was tipping a jug over his arm.
The mail is done left. You lost the fight, now let it go.
You didn't even ask me how come I was fighting them.
I don't reckon it's how I care. A man ought to have more pride than to get himself stomped with half the settlement watching and laughing at him.
They were picking on poor old Muley Dodd.
Everybody picks on Muley Dodd. Besides, I didn't see him.
He was scared. Minute I hit Snag, Muley lit out and running.
Josh, you can't spend your life picking up after Muley. The Lord chose to short Muley on brains, and that's too bad.
but it ain't up to you to be his everlasting keeper.
Somebody's got to help him. He can't help himself.
The late afternoon sun slanted into our faces, for the Buckaloo home lay west of the settlement. That was the way it had always been with the Buckaloos, always west of the settlement. Muley Dodd waited for us down the road, his hat in his hand, his eyes afraid. Short and stooped a little, Muley had the first whisker of manhood soft on his face. Ragged hair touched his frayed collar.
Josh! I didn't go to leave you there! I didn't always mean to run! The devil got in me, and I was afeard. It was the devil made me run.
It wasn't the devil caused you to light out, Muley. It was the keefers.
Hush, Thomas. Don't fret now, Muley. It's done over with. They ain't fixing to bother you again.
Are you sure, Josh? Did you whoop them good? You're a real friend, Josh. And next time there's a fight, I won't run away. I'll stay right there, and I'll help you.
Sure you will, Muley.
Josh, you know he'll always run. He'll be running the last day he lives. You can't protect him forever.
Thomas was only a couple of years older than me, but at times he acted as if the difference was 10. With Thomas, day was day and night was night. Right was right and wrong was wrong. You drew a line and you stayed on one side of it. You didn't step over it, ever. The Buckaloo home began long ago as a log cabin, but had been extended and enlarged through the years. At one time, a lot of Buckaloos had lived there, but gradually, each came of age and went out on his own. The boys went west, and the girls married off. Now there were only Pa and the oldest son, Lot, who was to inherit the place according to family custom, and there were Thomas and me. Pa sat hunched on the hewn log steps, puffing his pipe and taking his rest. He still worked hard, Titus Buckaloo did. He had cleared this land from virgin timber by himself at first, then with his sons to help. Pa's old pipe stood black against the white of his beard as he stared at me. I couldn't see any surprise in the pale blue of his eyes.
Mule drag you, Joshua?
No, sir.
And you didn't fall out of no tree. So I take it you've been fighting?
Yes, sir.
Win?
No, sir.
If you got a fight, at least you ought to win.
Next time, Pa.
That Colonel Ames, he's been by again, talking to me about Texas.
Pa, ain't it a little late in life for you to be thinking about faraway places anymore?
Oh, not for myself. It's you two that I've been fretting about. It's high time you had a chance to take and do something for yourselves, like your brothers have done.
You want us to leave, Pa?
No, son, it ain't that I want you to. A man don't like saying goodbye to his young. That's the way of life. You can see for yourself there ain't nothing left here for a grown man. If you ain't already got your land, you never will get it. What we got here will be just about enough for Lot once I'm gone. Ever since the first Buckaloo come across the big water, they've kept looking west. I done it in my day. Your brothers have done it. Now, I reckon it's your time.
Texas? I've been hearing right smart about it. The Fancher boy went there last year, him and that Whipple girl he married. And the Smith family. And the year before that, old Henry Leach. Only he died along the way.
The Fanchers got a letter from their boy a while back. He's right taken with the country, Pa.
The Colonel, he says this Stephen F. Austin has got him a colony there, and he'll let a man take up more land than he could accumulate here in a lifetime. All of that land, just for the asking. Of course, you'd have to build it from scratch, but us Buckaloos, we always done that.
One thing, Pa, you might not have thought about. Texas ain't the United States. It's part of Mexico. Us Buckaloos have always been Americans, ever since Grandpa froze his feet that winter with George Washington.
Oh, governments never did mean no awful lot to us Buckaloos, son. We always been so far out front that they never was any bother to us. Anyhow, there's been plenty of Americans gone there already. I doubt as you'll see much difference. Or something else? You're both of a marrying age, and neither one has got you a woman. Colonel Ames tells me a married man gets twice as much land in Texas as a single man. Now, that's something to consider. I don't expect you're apt to find many unattached females down there. Best play the game safe and take one with you. A bird in the hand, as they say. How about that Maribel Kiefer, Joshua? She's been chasing around you like a bear after honey.
She'd be a burden.
Oh, they all are. But think of that extra land.
She's not the prettiest I ever saw, and I don't love her.
Well, love wears off and looks change. Main thing is that she can cook. You'd be surprised, too, how she can help keep your bed warm in the wintertime.
Pa, I've tried her. Her cooking, I mean, she's not for me.
Well, how about you, Thomas?
I've never seen a woman I'd marry.
Oh, you always expect too much, Thomas. That's your weakness. You gotta learn to bend a little. Women are human. There never was but one perfect man, and I doubt there ever was a perfect woman.
There's still none here I'd want to marry.
Well, that's up to you. Down yonder, you ain't apt to find anything except Mexican girls.
I know we won't be marrying one of them.
We started when the warm spring sun brought the green rise of new grass. We said our goodbyes and pointed the wagon tongue southwestward, angling to cut across a corner of Mississippi. I'd come prepared. The gunsmith had reworked my long rifle, making it like new. On my left hip, I wore a big cast steel knife the gunsmith had fashioned, a heavy thing with a hickory handle, a blade 2 inches wide and 14 inches long. I also had a small skinning knife worn on a belt slung over my shoulder with a sack of flints and newly cast lead bullets. The wagon bed sagged with the weight of things we would use in the new land. The wagon would slow our trip. It would mean backstraining labor and galling delay in time of rain or in passing through the pine forest and the dense cane brakes which lay ahead. But it'd be all ours when we got there. We'd have the wagon and the horses, a plow piece, and an anvil and tools. We'd have saddles and harness and plant seed, 2 cows plus a heifer and a bull. We would be better equipped than most folks when we finally crossed the Sabine River into Stephen F. Austin's promised land. We hadn't gone 2 miles before we saw a man walking down the road in front of us, an old rifle in one hand and an old canvas bag slung over his shoulder.
Howdy, Josh. Howdy, Thomas. Y'all on your way to Texas?
That's right, Muley.
I'm on my way to Texas, too.
Muley, it's a far piece to Texas. You can't go there that way.
Well, I got lots of time, Josh. I got grub in the sack and powder and lead.
Muley, you don't have enough supplies in that sack to get you to the Nazi country even, much less to Texas.
I won't go hungry. I can follow bees. Besides, I got money, too. I got $3.52. Here, I'll show you.
Muley, you got to go on back home.
I already left home. Ain't got no folks there no more, and the roof's about to fall in on that old shack anyhow. I'll build me a real pretty house when I get to Texas.
Thomas, hold up! What we going to do about Muley?
Nothing. He's not our responsibility.
He's not nobody's responsibility. He's got no folks.
You've taken care of him for years, Josh, and let somebody else do it.
When Muley gets a notion in his head, he don't turn away from it. If he's got it in his mind to go to Texas, he'll keep walking till he dies.
You fixing to tell me we ought to take him with us? If you are, you'd just be wasting your breath. Goodbye, Muley.
Goodbye, Thomas. I'll see you in Texas.
I stared at Muley, worried and a little impatient. Thomas was right that I shouldn't have to be saddled with Muley all my life. Something came to me out of the Bible, something about the faith of the mustard seed. Muley had no conception of what lay ahead of him, but he had plenty of faith.
Thomas is fixing to go off and leave you, Josh. You better catch up. I'll see you all again when I get to Texas.
I rode on ahead, catching up to the wagon, but I couldn't keep from looking back. And Muley Dodd kept coming. Thomas, you'd just as well stop. I'm not going without Muley. All my life, I had heard tell of the Mississippi River, but I wasn't prepared. There it stretched in front of us, its lazy brown water so wide that the river was almost scary to look at. The first money we had spent since leaving home, we spent for passage across on a ferry. It was a long, slow crossing. The ferry heaved, and so did Muley Dodd. Crossing Louisiana, we were held up for days by hard spring rains which bogged the wagon to the hubs in black mud that gave way so easily to the iron-rimmed wheels but yielded them up so grudgingly. This was a place where even Thomas was glad to have Muley along. Being as little as he was, Muley had a strong back. He thrived on hard work as long as somebody told him what to do. At length, we came out of the thick pine timber to the Louisiana Creole town of Natchitoches on the right bank of the Red River. This was the jumping-off place for Texas-bound overland travelers. Thomas held the purse strings with a tight-clamped hand. What we didn't really need, we would do without. What we did really need, we had brought with us.
Just a final little jolly, Thomas. This is our last chance in the United States. Be a sport.
I've never been a sport. You want to dance? Dance around that there wagon and grease the hubs.
And I reckon me and Muley will go look around some. See what these here French folks have got to offer.
Well, you watch out. Don't be getting in no fights over Muley. Somebody acts like they're going to pick on him, you just bring him on back to the wagon. No arguments.
No arguments. We had hardly left the wagon when we saw the four horsemen. They rode toward the camp in a slow walk, stopping to peer curiously at the wagon from 30 or 40 yards.
Josh, what kind of men do you reckon them fellas are?
I don't rightly know. Two of them were a lot like the type I had known in the Tennessee settlements all my life. Outdoorsmen with sun-browned, tangle-bearded faces. The floppy hats, the homespun shirts, the woolen breeches were familiar enough. The other two were different. Small and wiry, hungry-looking. Their faces were dark, but not the same as those of the Negroes back in Tennessee. They wore peculiar hats with tall, pointed crowns and the widest brims I had ever seen. Both men wore leather breeches and boots and spurs with huge, wicked rowels. One of them spoke to the other, and the words were foreign. They made no sense to me. Mexicans, I realized. The strangeness of the men made us hold still in wonder and keep our silence.
After a while, the four rode closer. One man nodded with some show of friendliness.
Howdy, friends. Be y'all heading for Texas?
Yes, sir, we be.
Where y'all come from?
Tennessee.
Hear that, Foley? They be home folks.
They ain't from Tennessee.
Foley and me, we left Tennessee a mighty long time ago. Miguel and Alfredo, of course, they don't know Tennessee from Massachusetts. They be Mexican.
You come from Texas?
You gotta pardon Miguel. He don't know much English, except a few words like eat, sleep, and women.
You mean you know how to talk their language?
Sure. You learn it easy when you get to Texas. All you need is a good teacher. Or a good-looking teacher.
It's real lucky us running into these fellers. They can tell us a right smart that we ought to be knowing. My name's Joshua Buckaloo, but Josh is all I use. This here is Muley Dodd.
I answered Elijah. Poor Elijah, you know, like in the book. He was one of them prophets, or maybe he was a disciple. I forget which. That there is Foley. The Mexicans, they got names longer than a hoe handle, but all you need to remember is Miguel and Alfredo. How many with you, Josh?
Just us and my brother Thomas. Us three is all.
Sure got a load of plunder, just the three of you.
We figured to be prepared. Come meet my brother.
Thomas, come see what's here!
Thomas came around the wagon, halted and stared, a sharp question in his eyes.
These fellers come from Texas.
How do?
Thomas, I said they come from Texas. There's a lot they can tell us.
I already been told to ride smart.
How long before you figure on leaving, Thomas?
Can't say for certain. Might stay a spell.
That was a lie, for we had planned to leave the next morning, but I held my silence.
Your brother's a cautious man, Josh, and he's right. It don't pay to trust strangers in these parts. Man can't be too careful in a new country. Fine outfit you got. You ought to get off to a good start in Texas.
Lige pulled his horse around. Foley and the two Mexicans followed his example.
Maybe we'll see you again. There's a heap of questions I'd like to ask.
Anytime, Josh.
If you'd been civil, we could have talked with him. He wasn't like this at home.
We ain't at home, Josh.
But they was home folks, and they've been in Texas.
You're in a strange country, Josh. You don't trust nobody until you have time to size them up. And then you don't go telling anybody what your plans are. Remember that.
They've been on the trail. You condemn them because of what they looked like.
Some things, Josh, you learn to take by instinct. Out in the woods, did you ever sense a varmint before you seen it? It was like that with them four. It was like I had come across a pack of wolves. Nothing you can put your finger on, but the feeling's there. And when it's there, I pay heed to it.
I didn't get that feeling.
It'll come to you. Until it does, we'll go by my instincts.
Muley and I started to resume our walk down to the town.
Don't you be late. We won't get started by daylight.
Trailed by Muley's spotted hound, we walked up and down the length of the town, pausing to stare at the river, looking at the small boats, listening with a keen ear to the strange Creole talk.
I expect it means as much to them as English means to us.
No, I don't understand English neither. I just talk American.
That's not what I mean, Muley. It's just that
Well, those little kids yonder, how are they supposed to know what they're talking about? Looks to me like it would be simpler if everybody in the world just got together and decided to talk like we do. It must be the best language anyhow, or they wouldn't have wrote the Bible in it. Ain't that so?
I expect.
Looks like it sure would save everybody a heap of bother.
After a couple of hours of looking around, we hadn't seen anything of the four men. We figured they'd left town. Then on our way back to Thomas, we stumbled right into their camp. We found ourselves facing them over the flicker of a dying fire. I sensed a vague hostility.
Let's move in closer, Muley. They probably can't tell who we are.
Lige took a couple of steps forward, hand on a pistol stuck in his waistband. Then he smiled.
Well, I swear, it's a lad from Tennessee. Sit down here, Josh, you and Muley. Share some poor victuals with us. We got a little left.
I looked around for their wagon and saw that they had none. There were only four saddle horses and a couple of pack animals staked out on the grass.
Thanks, but we wouldn't want to put you out none. We'd drink a little coffee, though, if you got any.
Sure. Before the coffee, a little drop of kindness for Tennessee and fond recollections.
Then I tipped the jug over my arm. Whatever it was, it felt as if it would burn a hole plumb through me.
That Mexican stuff's pretty hot doings. Not as good as good old Tennessee makings, but it don't lack for authority.
Oh, that's for certain sure.
It came to me that Foley and the Mexicans were staring at us, their eyes hard. All of a sudden, I didn't like these men. Lige was probably all right, but the others, even disliking them, I kept glancing at the Mexicans, and Muley stared at them in honest curiosity.
Lige, I want you to tell us about Texas.
It's a mighty big subject.
Just the important things, what we ought to know before we get there.
Well, if I was giving advice, I'd say the thing most immigrants do wrong is come unprepared. But from the looks of your wagon, y'all come loaded for bear. So the next thing to decide is where you want to settle.
We talked to a Colonel Ames back home. He said we could get land in Austin's colony. You knew Colonel Ames?
Can't say as I recollect the gentleman. I know Austin, though. Foley knows about the good old Colonel Austin, him and his damned whip.
I thought everybody liked Austin.
Most folks do. Foley there, he's got a personal grudge is all, and he talks too much. Austin's pretty much the whole law in his colony. A man who strays off the straight and narrow has got to answer to Austin. He's a little feller, and he looks gentle, but now and again he rears up and shows his teeth. Now, Foley had a friend who'd done a transgression, and Austin ordered the man whipped and thrown out of the colony. Foley ain't forgave that.
Whipping is an awful salty punishment.
It beats hanging. They can't hang a man in Texas unless they get permission first out of Saltillo, and that's way to hell south. Takes a long time. So usually they just whip a man out of the settlement and hope somebody else will hang him. They don't appreciate the rough element in Austin's colony. By the by, you'll be needing to be able to show you're of good character. I can tell by looking, but Austin sets a heap of store on seeing it wrote down.
Thomas and me, we got letters from Colonel Ames and some of the quality folks around home, and we'll vouch for Muley.
Well, it takes a little money, too, to pay down on the land. I hope you got money.
A warning tingle of suspicion touched me. I'd never traveled before, but it seemed unlikely to me that quality folks would ask a man if he was carrying money.
Sure they got money. I got money, too. I got $3.52.
Muley.
Well, that's good, Muley. That much will take you a long ways in Texas. You know something, lad? I like you, too. Yes, sir, I like you. And I'm fixing to give you a mite of advice. Between here and Texas, there's a heap of unpleasant things laying in wait for the unwary. You gotta cross the Redlands. Lots of hard characters in there. Dangerous for three young fellas alone with one wagon.
We'll do all right.
There've been others that felt that way and never got to Texas alive. You need to join up with others heading for Texas. We'll be going that direction ourselves pretty quick. We'll be right tickled to have you with us.
My gaze drifted from one man to another. The eyes of Foley and the Mexicans were cold, and so was my back. Foley was twisted sideways, his right arm bent awkwardly as he tried to scratch along his spine. The truth came to me like the flash of a pine knot exploding in a campfire. Foley's back was sore. It wasn't a friend of Foley's who got whipped out of the colony. It was Foley himself. Suddenly cold all over, I pushed to my feet. We'll see about it. Thomas and me, we decided to camp close by here for a week or so and rest up the stock. We'll think on what you said.
We'll come around and see you in a few days.
At the wagon, Thomas sat back from the fire, a plate in his hand.
You've been gone a long time.
We ran into those men who stopped at our wagon today, the ones who said they were from Tennessee. Remember what you told me about being able to smell a varmint?
I remember.
Well, I think I smelled four of them.
Four men like that wouldn't have much trouble killing two, would they? Or three?
Not when the three thought the four were friends.
You're smarting up, Josh. Tonight we'll get the wagon ready. Come sunup, we'll be 3 hours down the trail.
Looking back over our shoulders every so often for sign of Lige and his three partners, we traveled 3 days through country that looked as if it would take only a little spit to turn it into a quagmire. The third night, the rain started. It was still raining at daybreak when we hitched the team. The wagon moved 10 feet and sank halfway to the hubs.
If we gotta bog down, let's do it out in the open where we can see what's coming around us.
You reckon they'll still come?
They might, if they don't find better pickings in Nacogdoches. I got a feeling this bunch of cutthroats wouldn't be choosy.
So we fought the wagon out into the open. I tied the sorrel on with the team and used him to help pull while Thomas and Muley threw their shoulders against the mired wheels and pushed. By mid-morning, we were 200 yards out into the clear.
We'll stop now.
We staked the livestock on grass close by and stretched an extra wagon sheet out from one side of the wagon to give us a place where we could stay out of the rain. No one came that day. In the night, Thomas and I took turns sitting up on watch. We couldn't trust Muley to stay awake. Next morning, the rain stopped. The sun came out from behind the breaking clouds to raise steam from the black, sodden ground. The second day of sunshine, we hitched up and made a try. We moved 100 feet and quit.
If they come, at least we're in a position to see them before they get here.
And they came. The four horsemen emerged from the timber in late afternoon. Lige rode in the lead. They halted, seeing the mired wagon in the open. Lige came riding on cautiously, Foley and the two Mexicans trailing by a length or so. They left two pack horses behind.
Thomas, they've come. Muley, come here, quick. Run!
They Indians, Josh? They Indians?
No, Muley, not Indians. But help me bring the stock in and tie them to the wagon. We don't want them to run off.
We tied the team and the milk cow securely.
Muley, you stay right here, tie it by the wagon. Don't say nothing and don't do nothing.
Thomas stood 10 feet out from the wagon, his rifle cradled over his left arm. I joined him. Lige reined up. He eyed us critically.
I would no ways call this friendly.
Neither would I.
Foley reined up on one side of Lige. The Mexicans stopped on the other. Their eyes were hostile.
A man would have to take this as a sign of distrust. You must think we're robbers or something.
The thought did occur to us.
Well, here I've been telling Foley and the boys that y'all just changed your minds and left Nacogdoches a little earlier than you intended to. If I was of a suspicious nature, I might think you just plain lied to us.
We don't want trouble. Y'all just ride on by us and don't be a stopping.
If we was robbers, you boys would have been in a tough spot now. I judge you still can't move that wagon. That boy yonder with your livestock ain't going to be of no use to you. So you'd be just two against four. And you got just one shot apiece.
We'd make those two shots count. You don't know which two we'd kill.
We come to do these boys a favor and see how it turns out. The milk of human kindness is done clabbered.
It's a long way to Texas. I gotta sleep sometime.
Boys, there ain't no use y'all dying for this. You can always get another wagon someday. But once you're dead, nobody can bring you back alive till the angel Gabriel himself blows on that horn.
We ain't dead yet.
And you needn't be, boy. You needn't be. Now think it over. We'll be back in the morning. You just ride out in the nighttime and forget you ever seen us. Or that you ever had a wagon.
Lige pulled his horse around and started back to the timber. One of the Mexicans drew his forefinger across his throat. The three men reined around and went off after Lige.
Josh, what do them fellers want? Josh, I don't think I like them fellers.
Thomas, what comes next?
Depends on them. Like as not, they'll lay up yonder in the timber and snipe at us. Let's don't be making them a target.
Like Foley said, it's a long trail to Texas. We can't dodge bullets the whole way.
No, we can't.
So we'll just lay low and see what kind of move they make.
What if they don't make one?
Then we will.
Every time one of us stepped out into the clear, a rifle ball would buzz like an angry hornet. The first one bothered me considerably. The second one made me mad.
What do they want to do that for? They can't hit us at this range.
They might if they're lucky. Mostly they want to keep us stuck here so they can pick their own time to come and get us. And maybe they think they can scare us into running away and leaving it all. That's what they want.
Well, they're scaring poor Muley to death, and me too, a little bit. And all that friendly talk, sweet as sorghum molasses, and then they want to rob us. The sun went down. I wasn't too hungry, and Muley was so frightened he never even thought of supper. But Thomas was calm. He built up the fire a little and went about heating some leftover rabbit stew. I got the idea somehow that Thomas might even be looking forward to the inevitable conflict with a certain enjoyment. As darkness came, the glow of a campfire showed in the timber. Eating themselves a good supper. They could stretch this for days if they wanted to, and all we can do is sit here.
Wrong, Josh. That's not all we can do. So far, Josh, what fighting you've done has been of a piddling variety. A bloody nose or a split lip was the worst you could get. Are you ready to fight now when you could get a bullet in your gut?
Just try me.
The way I see it, they're either planning on letting us sit here and worry all night, or they're waiting till late and try to catch us asleep. Either way, they'll figure they're the hunters. I doubt they'll look for us to come hunting.
You mean we're going after them?
It sure beats waiting, and our chances are better. Once it turns pure dark, we got a little time before the moon comes up. We can be on before they know it.
I'm willing to try it, but what about Muley? It'd be a hindrance to us, not a help.
That is what I tried to tell you in Tennessee. But anyhow, he stays here.
He'll be scared.
He'll stay if we have to tie him. You tell him that.
We checked our rifles. Each of us loaded a cap and ball pistol. Two weapons apiece meant a total of only four shots, with four targets. That was drawing it mighty fine.
What you fellas fixing to do, Josh?
We're going hunting in a little while. Don't fret, Muley. We smothered the fire, and sat a while in the darkness, listening. In the timber, we could still see the glow of the robbers' camp.
How do we know they won't be coming after us, and we won't run into them in the dark someplace?
We don't. We just have to go on faith and hope, and depend on them not being in no hurry. You scared?
If I was any scareder, I'd have to change breeches.
Well, it's about as dark as it's gonna get. We won't be in the timber before the moon comes up. You talk to Muley and be sure that dog of his is tied to the wagon.
Are you leaving me here by myself, Josh?
Just for a little while, Muley. You got to stay and look after the stock. Don't you leave this wagon for nothing, you hear me? Don't leave it at all.
I ain't gonna like it here, Josh.
You stay, though. Don't leave it for a minute or I'll be real mad at you.
I don't want you being mad at me, Josh.
Then you mind what I tell you.
We moved out. We crouched low, we moved on away. Paused to listen, then moved again. Ahead, brighter now, glowed the campfire. We paused again to listen. This time, we heard voices. Thomas signaled for me to follow him. Cautiously, testing the ground each time we put a foot forward, we moved toward the fire. Thomas's outline showed against the dim glow, bent low and edging in close. Soon we were in the fringe timber around the clearing where the outlaws had made their camp. Thomas hand-signaled me to come up beside him. We knelt to watch and to consider. Nearest us, at perhaps 20 feet, Foley sat with a jug.
I say we ought to have took them, Lige. How do we know they ain't packing up right now and moving out?
They just bogged that wagon. I say let them sweat a little. They'll be easier handled when they get good and scared. A scared man don't generally shoot good.
One of the Mexicans sat silently with a long dirk in one hand and a whetstone in the other. The other Mexican lay stretched out on a blanket, evidently asleep. A small jug sat beside him. I looked for their weapons. Foley's rifle lay on the ground within easy reach. The Mexican Miguel held the dirk. So far as I could tell, Lige had no weapon on him. He was 12 or 15 feet from any rifle in view.
Rifles first. I'll take Foley. You take the Mexican that's got the knife. We'll have to get Lige and the other Mexican with our pistols.
Just shoot them? From ambush?
That's what they would have done to us.
Foley and Miguel jumped to their feet. Foley moved so rapidly, I hardly saw him bring the rifle up. In the split second between the flash in the pan and the roar of my rifle, the Mexican sent the dirk spinning toward me. I saw him stagger. Then the blade slashed into my arm. Thomas made his shot good. Foley's rifle dropped harmlessly to the ground. The other Mexican was awake instantly, groping desperately for a weapon and tipping over his jug.
Madre de Dios!
Thomas dropped his rifle and drew the pistol out of his waistband. The pistol flashed, and the Mexican fell. Across the fire, Lige stood stunned. He made no move toward a weapon. The nearest was too far for him to reach. He turned and ran into the night.
Shoot him, Josh, quick!
But I was swaying. The warm blood running down my arm. Instinctively, I reached up and pulled the dirk out. I stood with it in my hand and stared in blind shock at the dead Miguel. Thomas leaped forward, grabbed up Foley's rifle, and fired it into the darkness. But he missed. Thomas stepped back into the firelight and methodically began to reload his pistol. Pursuit would be useless.
Why didn't you shoot him, Josh?
Oh, Josh, I didn't know. How bad it get you?
It's bleeding. That's all I can tell. Thomas bound the wound tightly and the bleeding stopped. He pulled me away from the fire and into the darkness. He held the reloaded pistol ready.
Josh! Josh! Where are you at, Josh?
It's Muley. I knew he wouldn't stay at the wagon.
He stayed till it was over with. That was the main thing.
Over here, Muley!
Muley came into the firelight, his eyes wide. It's all right, Muley. We got them before they could get us.
Are they all dead?
I reckon.
This one ain't dead, Josh. He's moving.
The wounded Mexican had inched himself along on the ground until he had reached a knife. His fingers were closing around it when Thomas leveled the pistol. A faint smile came to my brother's face. The Mexican's fingers spread and then they went stiff. A chill ran all the way down to my boots. I stared hard at Thomas, for this was something I'd never seen in him before.
It had to be done.
You didn't have to enjoy it.
Was that how it looked? I didn't. But on the other hand, I can't say as it bothered me none either.
It's Lige. He's stolen one of our horses.
Damn!
Well, maybe it was a fair trade. He couldn't get to his own. We lost one horse, but got six.
No, Josh. We'll pick the best one from theirs to replace the one we lost. We'll turn the rest of them loose.
Turn them loose? Thomas, we can use those horses. And it's a cinch these men will never need them again.
They're thieves, not us. We don't steal, even from dead men.
He had a strange sense of values, my brother did. He could smile while he killed a man, but he wouldn't take that man's horses.
A real pair of cutthroats, weren't they? First Mexicans we ever saw, and they tried to kill us. Gives us a lot to look forward to when we have to live amongst them in Texas.
Maybe the others won't be like these, Thomas. These were outlaws.
They're a sorry class of people.
The other two weren't Mexicans. They was from Tennessee.
I told you I could smell them, just like wolves. I've already decided one thing, Josh.
What's that?
I'll never trust a Mexican.
Nacogdoches was the gateway to Mexico. It was a bustling gathering place for hopeful immigrants bound for Texas. It was also a gathering place for a lawless element that had been run out of the colonies, or never had been able to get in. Colonel Ames, back in Tennessee, had written a letter for us, which Thomas, in turn, had given to an Austin representative in Nacogdoches. We had been handed an immigration document with Austin's signature on it to guarantee us clear passage.
Get close to the wagon, Josh. We got company coming.
Half a dozen horsemen approached, wearing uniforms that had been bright when new, but now were faded and wrinkled and brown with grime.
Raggy-looking lot. Mexicans.
He pulled the team to a stop as the soldiers came up. One man circled around and halted beside Thomas, touching his hand to the bill of his cap. His face was a deep brown, his eyes almost black. His uniform had been fancier once than the others. He was plainly an officer. His mustache was thick and black, but he was still a young man.
How do?
Buenos dias.
The Mexican took his time, studying the wagon and the animals trailing it.
Señor Tartars.
An American was trailing the soldiers. Astride a fine black horse, he pulled around beside the officer.
Ellos llegaron para quedarse. Lieutenant Obregón has not yet mastered the English language. Occasionally, I help him. My name is Benjamin D. Charters. I hope I can be of service to you gentlemen.
What's he need?
You gentlemen surely know about the law of 1830, which restricts immigration into Mexico. The lieutenant says he trusts you have some documentary evidence of your right to enter this country.
I studied Charters, trying to discover the reason for Thomas's quick and adverse judgment. Charters spoke with the ease and eloquence of a lawyer. His suit was cut of good cloth and well-tailored, though it had seen better days. Thin at the knees and elbows, frayed at the cuffs and collar, it told of a genteel poverty. Thomas reached back into the wagon and got the document with Austin's signature. Charters passed it on to the lieutenant. Obregon read it critically and handed it back, shaking his head.
Ese no es suficiente.
He says this is not enough. He must have another permit to go beyond Nacogdoches.
They told us in Nacogdoches is all we need to get us to San Felipe de Austin.
This is a long way from Nacogdoches. Some of these garrisons make their own laws.
What else we gonna need?
You need a new order signed by a local military officer to pass you through the guard at the road to San Felipe.
How we get this order?
It is difficult, usually. Yeah, the wait is often very long. You know how slow the military can be about these things. However, the lieutenant says he likes your looks, and he's decided to do you a favor. He has ways of cutting through the regulations when the reason's good enough.
He wants money.
A bit of coin is like grease on the wheels of progress. All men have their price. I think you'll find that the lieutenant's price is reasonable.
What he wants is a bribe.
I didn't say that. Nobody ever bribes anybody in Mexico. This is simply a sort of a hidden tax. Everybody pays it when the occasion arises. They call it mordita, a little bite. And it's one of the facts of life in Mexico, like ground corn and chili pepper.
What part do you get out of it, Charters?
You are insulting me, sir. Now, if you don't want to go to San Felipe...
We are going to San Felipe. And we'll do it without giving you or this leather-colored parasite a penny.
I don't see that you have much choice.
Tell those Mexicans to get themselves out of the way if they don't want to get run over.
This is Mexico. You're a foreigner here. You'll live up to Mexican laws or suffer the consequences.
This isn't law. This is a try at robbery. We've been tried once already on the way down here. Didn't work out for them, and it won't work out for you.
Try to move past these men and you'll be stopped.
You're not getting any money out of us.
Look, friend, you can afford to put a little silver across the lieutenant's palm. The Mexican government doesn't pay these men much way out here, and what it does pay is often slow in coming. Can't blame these soldiers for taking a little extra.
It's wrong. I'll rot here before I pay.
Ellos no quieren pagar.
Charter spoke to the lieutenant. From his looks, I thought Obregon might order his men to shoot us down like dogs. He reined his horse around, savage as an Indian, and signaled his troops to follow him.
You'll get tired of sitting here, and you'll come begging to pay. Obregon will take a very big bite then. You can count on that.
Thomas, we're in trouble now. Wouldn't it have been easier to have just paid the man a little something?
That would have been a compromise.
What would that hurt? We've always got a compromise.
Not when it's right against wrong. You come to a fork in the road, you gotta either turn to the left or right. You can't compromise. You do what's right or you do what's wrong. Bribery is wrong, whether it's $1 or $100.
A man can get awful hungry trying to be right all the time. How do we get out of here without paying?
You know, there aren't many soldiers. Ever try to stop a creek flowing by sticking your hand in it? Water just goes right on between your fingers. I'll ask around, find out where they guard the trails. Then we'll go the long way around. We don't have to follow their route. We'll just make our own.
I didn't realize it then, but our encounter with Lige, Foley, and the two Mexican bandits, followed by our experience with the hungry Lieutenant Obregon and Nacogdoches, had been enough to start hatred to gnawing at Thomas. From this time on, he had a cold contempt for all things Mexican. We did what Thomas said, took the long way around, and got clear of Nacogdoches. It was so easy, I felt sure there must be a catch to it somehow, but there wasn't. We found out later that there was a trail which had been used by so many contraband immigrants that it even won its own name, the Tennesseans Road. There just weren't enough Mexican soldiers to patrol the whole country. As we crossed the map-marked boundary into Austin's colony, we began to come across settlements and scattered farms. Plainly, Austin had picked these people with a degree of care. Spring-planted crops were coming up in cleared fields which had been virgin grasslands a few months earlier. Log cabins stood along creek banks where Indians had stalked deer or gathered the native pecans. At last, we came to the edge of the broad and lazy Brazos River. Across the river, atop a high bluff on the west side, perched San Felipe de Austin. Ferryman was one of the swivel-jawed kind.
Sure proud to see young fellers like y'all coming in. Men of the land. Seems to me like this place has gotten overrun of late with lawyers and the like. Soft-handed men. We need more with dirt under their fingernails, the way it was when we first come here with Austin. Yes, sir, I've been here pretty near from the first. I was one of Austin's old 300. Been a right smart of changes, I can tell you.
It sure is a rich-looking country, all right. Fish and game like I never saw before. Crops show a heap of promise. And trees. I never knew there were so many different kinds of trees in the whole world.
You see them Mexican soldiers on the west shore? Y'all got to stand inspection yonder.
We have the papers. The Mexicans give you much bother?
It ain't that they do anything, really. It's just that they're here, that's all. Used to, when we first come, we had a right smart engine trouble, and we could have used some soldiers to help us. They wouldn't send any. Now that we're strong enough to take care of our own selves, Mexico sends soldiers in. Maybe they're afraid we've gotten too strong. I get the feeling sometimes they're watching us, not the engines.
If the Mexicans are so worried about us Americans, how come they ever let any of us settle here in the first place?
To protect Mexican people from the engines. Americans always did have a reputation as engine fighters. Mexico figured to put Americans in between the engines and their own people. Many a red devil has died of indigestion on a Texian rifle ball.
That was the first time I'd heard the word Texian. I sensed it was a way the Anglo settlers here spoke of themselves.
Go see Sam Williams over in Austin's land office. He'll introduce you to Austin.
The Mexican soldiers waited as the wagon pulled out onto the riverbank. The dislike was plain and open in Thomas's face while a Mexican sergeant came forward to look at the paper. It was easy to see that the black mustached man couldn't read the words. He was going by the official look of it, but he read the dark look in Thomas's eyes. Rapid Spanish passed back and forth among the ill-clad troops. Not understanding a word of it, I realized for a moment just how helpless and alone an outsider would be. It occurred to me that this was one major barrier between the average Mexican and the average Anglo settler, this difference of language.
Thomas, one thing I'm going to do as soon as I can is learn to speak Mexican.
English is good enough for me.
You mean a man can learn to talk like they do, Josh? I figured you had to be born with it.
Without friendliness, the sergeant waved us on. It was more of a town than I had supposed. Thomas pulled the team onto a street that bordered the eastern edge of the plaza. We found Austin's office in one end of a double log cabin. I was a little let down.
This don't look much like the head office of the whole colony of Texas.
Handsome is as handsome does. I bet the roof don't leak.
Sam Williams met us at the door. We introduced ourselves. Thomas handed Sam the document with Austin's signature.
To be sure, you'll be wanting a grant of land. Do you have any idea where you'd like to settle?
We've studied the map till we know it backwards. We'd like to go somewheres west.
Why west?
Why not? You still got land to the west, haven't you?
Yes, but it's wilder, farther removed from the more settled portions. It puts you in more danger of contact with the Indians. In short, it's a long way to civilization.
We'll just take civilization with us.
Well, if that's your wish, then we'll go forward on that basis. Now, you understand about the Mexican colonization laws?
Some. Colonel Ames told us.
Well, what it amounts to is that a family man can receive a labor of farming land and a sitio of grazing land if he wants to raise stock. Now, a labor is 177 acres. A sitio is 4,428 acres. By law, you two brothers as single men won't qualify for a full grant each. We can list you as a family, and you can receive that amount together. Now how about him?
I got money for land, too. I got $3.52.
Muley, that won't be enough. But don't you fret. You can go with us. Whatever we got, you'll have a share of it.
Thanks, Josh. You're a good feller, but there's no need. I got my own money. I want to put in my part.
If it'll make you happy, Muley. This way, at least you got a claim on us. Both of us.
Oh, it's Colonel Austin.
For weeks now, I had been hearing Austin's name. I guess I expected the man to stand 8 feet tall. So, for a moment or two, as Austin stood in the doorway, I felt the quick sag of disappointment. In reality, Stephen F. Austin was a rather spare man, and he had to lift his face to look at us, even Muley Dodd. but strength showed in the care-drawn features and determination in his dark eyes.
And Colonel Austin, these are the Buckaloo brothers from Tennessee.
Pleased to meet you.
I was surprised at the strength of Austin's grip. Those small hands hadn't looked capable of taking hold so tightly. Austin read the letter of recommendation from Colonel Ames and several other letters from various people back home in Tennessee. He glanced questioningly at Muley.
Muley's with us. We'll vouch for him.
This can be a fine country for those willing and able to work. It can be death for the incapable.
Muley's with us.
You'll not regret that you've come. Nature has supplied us with everything we need except population. You and the others like you are slowly supplying that. You are unmarried, I see. Later on, as you marry, you can each obtain enough land to fill out your individual allotment to full size. And, of course, as the children come, we get our population. I might add that if you marry a Mexican woman, the law entitles you to even more land.
No chance of that.
I would wager you've seen no Mexican women yet.
We've seen some of the men.
You would be surprised how many American men have found Mexican women to marry. Some of them are quite pretty, and they have one sterling qualification. They're here. Have you men any strong leanings toward politics?
We never been no way connected with politics. The Buckaloos have always voted for Andrew Jackson. Past that, we just never was interested.
I have a good reason for asking. Mexico is still unstable. Politics can be a perilous thing here. I've endeavored from the beginning to keep these colonies free of the political pressures that have been the bane of Mexico. Out where you're going, you'll have some Mexican neighbors. In many ways, you'll find them different from yourselves. All humans come from the same mold. Be friendly, get to know them. But above all, remain aloof from their politics. They are the natives here, and we are the strangers. Mexico still has turbulent times ahead. It will require a steady hand and a careful silence to see us safely through.
The surveyor who tied his horse and pack mule behind our wagon and went along with us was a lean, likable man named Jared Pounce. He had come with the old 300, had a farm of his own, and did outside work ranging from gunsmithing to surveys.
You lads come prepared, I sure grant you that. I've been here since almost the first, and I still ain't got me a wagon. There's three classes of settlers in Texas these days. The upper class are them that owns a wagon. The next class down uses a sled. And the lower class, they just have to walk and tote their own load. You boys are starting off in the upper class.
Now that we were getting near it, I began to itch with impatience for a view of our own land. I begrudged every stop we made, but Pounce wouldn't be hurried along the trail.
Well, I'll just take it as it comes, boys. Life's too short to spend it in a loop. There's too much to see and learn and enjoy. It's hell on women, but it's God's own country for a man. You wake up every morning to a brand new world, especially when you go west where the people ain't thick yet. There it stands all around you. Big sky, a whole world of room. You never saw such a country for hunting either. They plan these grants so that they front on the water. You want to locate on a clear creek so as to have clear water all the time. The Colorado is a mighty river, but she runs muddy. Man has to let it settle before he drinks it, or he'll have to lay over to let his stomach settle instead.
And what about engines, Jared?
They'll bear watching. They don't bother folks much anymore in the settlements, but now and again they'll skulk around the fringes and do mischief. You boys are sure beyond the fringe.
Austin said we'd have some Mexicans for neighbors. We have to have trouble with them?
Well, Mexicans have got their own ways. You'll find good ones and bad ones and indifferent, just like there is amongst the rest of us. They're saints and they're sinners. I'd say if you don't bother them, they ain't apt to bother you.
I reckon a man could even make friends with them.
Oh, sure, I got some Mexican friends, and I got a few Mexican enemies. It's like any place else. You got to judge each man separate. Trust them all, and you'll get your fingers burnt. Condemn them all, and you'll miss some people that would have been good friends. And out here, you'll need all the friends you can get.
We didn't have to do all our own cooking. Pounce had traveled these trails many times and knew where the good cooks lived. He was more likely to refer to people by their cooking than by their names. One place was the Corn Dodger Woman's. Another belonged to the Deer Meat and Honey Man. Most, but not all of the men wore buckskins. The women, homespun. The houses were mostly of a kind, built of logs. Some, where the family was large, were big double cabins with an open dog run in the center. Most of the floors were of earth, though here and there we found a cabin with puncheon flooring. Not everybody had a cabin. In one place, we came across a new arrival who hadn't taken time yet to put up any kind of building. He and his wife were still living out of their wagon while they broke the land and got a crop started. There would be a cabin later when the crop was up.
That's how it'll be with us, Josh. We'll likely spend most of this summer sleeping under the wagon.
That's what we've done since the day we left home.
I like it.
Most young men just naturally take to the outdoors. Used to be I could have gone for a year without a roof over my head, and I'd never given it a thought. Now, though, when night comes around, I like to look up at the rafters instead of the stars. Sign of age, I reckon.
In due time, we hauled up to the Colorado River. As Jared had said, it was red with mud carried in upriver. Standing there, looking out across that muddy river, I felt a deep emotion rolling over me like a flood. I sensed that somewhere yonder, not far away now, lay the ground we had been looking for. I knew that soon I would set my boots down on our promised land.
Thomas, I got a feeling about this country. I'm going to like it here.
We come too far not to like it.
Boys, let me make a suggestion to you. One time, I was through this neck of the woods on an Indian chasing party. Not far from here, I came across a place on a creek as pretty a place as ever I seen. For a long time, I kept thinking, someday I'll come back and take it up. Now I know I never will. It's yours if you want it.
Show us.
We crossed the river and we traveled a while. I knew the place instinctively, even before Jared spoke. I touched spurs to horse and rode ahead across a flat stretch of open ground that one day soon would be a field. Beyond lay an uneven stand of timber along a creek. A buck jerked its antlered head toward me, the startled eyes wide and brown. It bounded away into the timber. Three wild turkeys, disturbed by the deer, moved into a trot, then soared at a low level into the shelter of tangled underbrush. I rode on without slowing until I came to the bank of the creek. Below me was a deep flow of clear water. Looking around carefully for sign of human life and seeing none, I dismounted and tied the horse to a bush. Then, rifle in my hand, I moved down the bank to the water's edge. I tasted it and found it as good as any in Tennessee. I returned to the flat and waited there, looking around until the wagon came up. My spirit soared as it had never done before.
Thomas, the trip is over. We're home.